Yeah, this is my visual for what Sammy Fame is like. Who can identify this? Where's this from? Yes, a movie that scared the hell out of me. Anyway, so one good thing about writing is that it's a form of therapy. It saves me a trip to the shrink, and shrinks are very expensive. And let me tell you that we're in the middle of a kind of mental health epidemic. I think the statistics for suicide and depression are through the roof. And I feel that if more people kept diaries, you know, it would at least be an outlet for them to express what ails them, you know, what keeps them from leading the lives they want to lead. Of course, you know, the problem is a lot of people also don't know how to express themselves, you know, so there you have it. But I've been keeping a journal since I was 15, and of course, you know, in the early days, it was mostly hatred of your teachers, unhappiness, unrequited love, general neurosis. But then in college, one of my favorite authors was Graham Greene. He wrote The Power and the Glory, The End of the Affair, Our Man in Havana, The Comedians, and so on. And in an interview, he said that if you write 1,000 words a day, the books will take care of themselves. And so I trained myself, beginning in college, to write 1,000 words a day. The journal is a large part of that. And then, you know, the journal, and then stories that I was working on. So you work yourself up to 1,000 words a day. I always compare this to training yourself for tennis competitions by serving 1,000 times a day, so that when you're on center court in Wimbledon, you're not thinking of, you know, where you're going to put the ball. So if you train enough, you know, it's almost like a kind of automatic pilot. Later, I found out that the quotation that I had read was wrong, and he said 500 words a day. And so this is good because I feel that I can take an occasional break from writing. So I've gotten so used to writing a journal that if I didn't write about something, I'm not sure it really happened. You get to that point. And then a good thing about keeping a journal is that you have something to read for material. And I remember a quote by Oscar Wilde. He said, "I always take my diary with me when I'm on the train so I can have something sensational to read." And, you know, and Oscar Wilde was right. I say, if your life is boring, why does your diary have to be boring as well? I say, you can spice up your life. You can lie. I say, no one is going to read your diary, right? Unless, you know, you want it published. And then, you know, diaries, I feel, should be burned, you know, at your death. So, but then, you know, you can quote them for material. And so my worldview is very simple. No matter how terrible things are, you can always write about them. And so I like to repeat something by the Roman writer Ovid. "Be patient and tough. Someday this pain will be useful to you." Hold on, I need water. Okay, is anybody bored yet? Yeah, so... oh, I forgot to show you this lovely picture of the couch of Sigmund Freud. Sigmund Freud, who invented psychoanalysis. When I was in Vienna, I went to look at the couch. And in recent years, they actually had to have a fundraising to restore the couch for hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I said, what? So anyway. So, who are your influences? You know, when we write, we develop our own voice, what everyone refers to as our voice, by admiring certain practitioners of the art and then imitating them and getting to the point where you feel confident enough in your skills so you can drop them all together. So I have made a quick list of my influences. First, Sesame Street. I grew up during the Sesame Street era, and not only does it teach you language, but everything is delivered through humor, right? So I feel that my generation's sense of humor is very much inflected by Sesame Street. And then you also have a lot of cultural references, like suddenly an orange starts singing the aria from Carmen. And so when you hear the aria from Carmen, oh, I recognize that from Sesame Street. And also I read an article recently that Sesame Street was really part of the civil rights movement, where they were trying to reach inner city kids, so as an educational program. And so, in a way, even if you know we were just sitting at home watching TV, we were part of the civil rights movement. And you know, I have to say that first time I went to New York, well, you know, I didn't know the train system, so I got on the wrong train. I didn't know that it was going to stop by the museum I wanted to go to. It was an express train, so I got off in Harlem. And I started to walk around Harlem, and I said, I know this place. This is where Sesame Street was shot. And I felt no fear, because, you know, I have titas. They wind up in Harlem or the Bronx. They're in fear. Oh, no, you know, the black people are going to come and get me. No. As in, if you saw Sesame Street, you do not have that fear. Okay. And then, also, I read a lot of fairy tales. And as I mentioned, the Old Testament, here's something by William Blake, an illustration of the Old Testament. And so the Old Testament is great for the grandeur of the language in the King James Bible, and also for all the smiting. And you know, the religious leaders are always criticizing the media for, you know, for all the sex and violence, but no one has more sex and violence than the Old Testament. I'm not kidding. As in, you've got incest in Game of Thrones proportions, you've got smiting, you've got genocide, the works. And another book that was very important to me growing up was Edith Hamilton's Mythology, which was my substitute for a classical education, because that's where we learn, you know, Greek and Roman mythology and so on. Recently, I watched the film The Lighthouse with Robert Pattinson and Willem Dafoe. And I was very proud of myself because when I was watching it, I said, aha, I recognize those allusions. That's Proteus, the sea god, and Prometheus, whose liver was eaten away by eagles. Okay. And so reading Edith Hamilton's Mythology is a great foundation for learning literature. I know because when I went to college and I was taking Shakespeare under Professor Ramos, who was wonderful and terrifying, the only times I could answer was when I recognized the names of the Greek characters. And whenever people despair that Filipinos don't read, I like to point out that Fully Booked has sold thousands of copies of the hardcover anniversary edition of Edith Hamilton's Mythology. So there's hope, you know. Okay. And then, of course, like many people my age, I read Nancy Drew, which not only taught me about girl power, because, you know, the leads were all girls, it taught me the rudiments of plot, how to maintain suspense, and so on. And it also taught me a very important lesson that serials really sell, because people cannot wait to get the next installment, right? So it's always been a mystery to me as to why there are not more murder mysteries in the Philippines. We should all be writing murder mysteries. We don't even have to invent them. You can just read the papers. So, no, seriously, we all need to write murder mysteries because it's easy. So what is stopping us from writing murder mysteries? I find that the major cities of the world all have a great detective attached to them. Like, for England, it's correct. So, you know, so the Philippines, where is our, you know, local detective? Is this because the procedural part is going to be very difficult? Because, you know, if you write a murder mystery, then you have to write in, you know, the fact that by the time the police get to the corpse, everyone has taken a souvenir and stepped on the evidence. And also the fact that, does anything get solved? So, you know, it's going to be a murder mystery slash fantasy. But, you know, I feel that if you want to write novels, there's nothing like murder mysteries because, you know, the process is already very clear and defined. And also, if there is a writer's block, there is also a reader's block where, you know, for some reason you cannot bring yourself to finish a book, pick up a murder mystery. Before you know it, you'll have read 10 of those. And then, you know, you're right back on track. And then the other more influences, I grew up during the martial law era when there were reruns of classic Star Trek, not the Jean-Luc Picard Star Trek, but the Taki one with William Shatner as James T. Kirk going around the galaxy, getting with all the babes and all the planets and being a terrible ham. And so I watched a lot of Star Trek. And Star Trek at the time made up for the wonkiness of its sets. As in, people would have a fight and then, you know, push each other and they'd go right through the hardboard set. But they made up for this by hiring the most important science fiction writers of the era to write the scripts. So it was hard science fiction. And I hate to say this about Star Wars. I also enjoyed Star Wars in my childhood, but Star Wars is fantasy. Star Trek is science fiction. The recent J.J. Abrams Star Trek, well, they're more like adventure stories, but, you know, I would like to see Star Trek return to science fiction. And so because I love science fiction, I read, you know, Dune by Frank Herbert, which is being filmed, which will come out this year. I read Philip K. Dick, whose work was the basis for Blade Runner. And, of course, Ursula Le Guin, who was my bet for a Nobel Prize, but then she died. And I remember that, you know, among us pretentious literature majors in UP, there were always people who insisted that it's Ursula Le Guin. Like Gauguin. It's like, no, it's Ursula Le Guin. The same people who said that, you know, the Marquis de Sade was the Marquis de Chardin, because Chardin was a popular singer of the 80s. And then The Catcher in the Rye is very important to me because I learned to write my first short stories by imitating the voice of Holden Caulfield. And so I imitated the voice of Holden Caulfield in several short stories until the ridiculousness of it occurred to me. It's like, why am I sounding like a 16-year-old from the Upper East Side? I think I should, you know, start talking more like myself. But imitation is how I discovered how to write. And, you know, if you're wondering how to develop your voice, I would suggest that you do what old-time writers used to do. They would copy their favorite novels by hand. They did get Charles Dickens' Great Expectations and copy it. Because, you know, you're sort of replicating the experience of writing it, even if it's basically a form of ventriloquism. But then you will pick up something along the way. So, for instance, you love The Age of Innocence by Edith Wharton. Get a notebook and start copying it by hand, and you will pick up something.